Welcome back to episode 2 of season 2 of the Healthcare India podcast with me, Dr. Vikram Venkateshwaran, coming to you live from the health tech capital of India, which is Bangalore. The last episode, we talked a lot about the macroeconomic factors, especially around health insurance, and how I mentioned that there is almost a 400 million or 40 crore large market, which does not covered by any kind of insurance in healthcare. Neither the government schemes, neither private schemes. And there's a huge opportunity for growth there. So today I'm going to talk more about a major development that's happening in one of the second largest healthcare system in India, which is the Manipal Hospitals. From a business side of it, it looks like a TPI, which was invested in the hospital chain, is looking for an exit, and KKR might be moving in. So this is going to be one of the largest private equity deals in the healthcare system in India, and which shows that there is a growing interest in investments in India. Lastly, we saw some changes, Care Hospital, Sahyadri Hospital, all of them undergoing some change in management. And we also see a lot of investments into the healthcare system, especially if you look at places like KIMS, which had investments from Atlantic Partners. And we also saw a change in management in some of these hospitals. So I think overall the business conditions in India are looking very exciting, especially from an investment point of view from the hospital chains. So having said that, you know, if you leave out the top 10 hospital systems, there seems to be a big gap. And there's a great opportunity to make that area also work. So I think what I'm trying to say is, from a business point of view, the healthcare systems in India are looking at two scenarios. One is the top end, where, you know, everything is pretty much flushed in. You have process, people, technology in place, and you have management systems that are working and investments that are pouring in. Then we have the bottom end, where the government has really shored up what they can do. And in between, there's a huge market. So that's where the opportunity lies, if you ask me, really. Not at the bottom end, not at the top end of the pyramid, but in the middle, which is pretty counterintuitive to what C.K. Pralhad had been mentioning in his book. Second important news is, if you look at stress, which is supposed to be a big contributor to a lot of our maladies, especially in the cities, there is clear research that shows that medium amount of stress is actually good for the body. And this is not something new. As medical practitioners, as doctors, we all know that if you are just too relaxed before an important event, you can make mistakes. To give you a good perspective, before surgeries, I used to like a little bit of stress. I liked that little bit of pressure so that I could prepare well. If you prepare well, your preparation goes well, everything goes well. Same holds true for students who prepare for exams, or for engineers who are preparing to install a new power plant. There has to be a little bit of stress, which is important, because what stress does is actually increases the blood flow in the body, gets your BP up, and you start concentrating. Now, there is a recent study from the Case Western Reserve University School of Medicine, which says that your immune system could actually benefit from a little bit of stress. And this is fantastic. You know, throughout COVID, we talked about acquired immunity and tacit immunity and all those forms of immunity, and people have been taking immunity boosters for a while. But a little bit of moderate stress would actually be beneficial to the body. Obviously, chronic stress is very, very bad, which can lead to other conditions. But a little bit of stress, a moderate amount of stress, is actually good. And actually, lack of stress might actually lower your immune system to such a level that you may not be able to, deal with it. Now, this study was done on mice, not on human beings. So clinical trials are still awaited. This was done with mice, and they found that, you know, the production of cytokines were increased, and cytokines, as you all know, lead to improved immunity. So very interesting study, you should look it up. I will share the link of the study in my description for the website. Now, today's topic, if you ask me, is around digital twins. And how I stumbled upon this topic was, I was preparing for a for an event, a workshop of sorts, and one of the participants in the workshop started talking a lot about digital twins. So those are, for those who are not aware of it, digital twins is like it's essentially a collection of digital data, creation of digital data that represents a physical object, right? So if you look at the definition, this term was coined almost 20 years ago. But obviously with Industrial Revolution 4.0, which is more around digital and use of data, it has become very relevant. Also, sensor technology being where it is, as cheap as it is, it makes huge implications in the industry. So digital twins, if you ask me in a very simple way, it's a digital replication of a living or a non-living entity that allows data to be seamlessly transferred between this entity and the physical entity. So in a sense, in a very simple way, I can create a digital replica of me and run a series of tests. For example, I can probably make that digital replica of me run 5Ks every morning for 1 month and see what's the impact on the rest of the body, what's the impact on my blood flow, circulatory system, cardiac system, on my fat content, etc., etc. So I can go on doing these experiments without really having to subject the physical body through that experiment and see what works best. So in the healthcare world, it has huge implications. Okay, so let's look at a simple case of oncology, right? In oncology, you know, the line of attack is the most important defense against cancer. And there could be three lines of attack. There could be chemo, there could be on surgery, or there could be radiation. But I can create digital replicas of the patient, subject them through these three diverse treatments and see where the patient responded best. Now, digital twins are already being used in some form or fashion. If you look at ultrasound today, the scan times have significantly reduced because, you know, a lot of the systems use artificial intelligence to recreate parts of the body and then see how the 3D scan looks like. So that's on the diagnosis side. But just imagine the implications of this if we extend digital twins across the spectrum. That means I can try different therapies, medicines, nutrition, diet regimes, etc., etc. It's a really, you know, I won't say it's a pipe dream. It's almost there. And in certain cases, like manufacturing for diagnostic and preventive maintenance in aircrafts, for example, or power plants, it is already being used in some form or fashion. That's why manufacturing industry is probably the biggest beneficiary of digital twins as of now. But there are three key areas where investments have to be made. For example, in India, we don't have the right process and protocols for treatment. So process and protocols for treatment would have to be standardized for each disease condition in case digital twins has to work. That means every doctor, every hospital system has to follow a certain set of standards, which is not happening today, because today we are more experienced than led protocol, right? Second is, I think from a healthcare point of view, we need to do a deeper dive on the working of sensors. I think sensor systems work very well for certain things. Today, your cars, your washing machine, your fridge, your dishwashers are all running on sensors. But I think in the healthcare systems, the understanding of the sensor as it applies to the human body needs to be understood better, right? We already have instances, for example, in the new Samsung smartwatch, the ECG machine is still undergoing FDA clearance and it's not cleared by the FDA. So there is a huge dependency when it comes to healthcare on regulatory bodies like FDA to clear these sensors. So the understanding of how the sensors work is very important. And third is, I don't think there are enough people from a process and technology point of view who understand the working of the human body. You can't have doctors and nurses running everywhere. Already the healthcare system is under stress. So unless we make a policy level change that, you know, even normal engineers and process experts get a deep understanding of the human body, this is not going to work, because we simply won't have the right talent to make these processes and systems work. Even today, we see a lot of students not opting for biology because they're afraid of blood, or they're afraid of dissection or something like that. So basic understanding of human anatomy is lacking. So while there is promise in digital twins, and those of you who reached out to me in the past, you know, you want to learn more about technology, you want to understand how technology is applicable here. So this is for you. If you really want to understand a few use cases that are already there, I think Siemens Healthineers has a use case on their website on digital twins, and they seem to be very invested in this area. So that's one organization to look at. But beyond that, I think there's a huge gap. It fundamentally can revolutionize healthcare, especially diagnosis and care management. Are we there yet? No. How long will it take? I think if we get all the fundamentals right, including understanding of sensors, understanding of talent, understanding of process protocols, I think we are 10 years off from seeing realistically implications of digital twins in healthcare. Plus, the challenge with things like digital twins is that it can't be a ROI based investment, in the sense that you can't say that, okay, I'm going to put in like $500 million right now and I expect something at the end of the quarter. It's not going to happen. So unless we are ready to take a long-term view, and this is for the investors who are listening to this, unless you're ready to take a long-term view of such technologies, it is very difficult for you to make any returns on it. That's why, despite all the advances in technology in India, we are still lagging in genomics, and that's another topic for another day. But if digital twins has to work, the talent has to be there, which has to be a policy level change. The understanding of sensors and the human body has to be there, which is more or less a technology level change. The protocols and processes have to be standardized, which is a hospital level change. But last but not the least, the investors have to take a long-term view of the how this will work. Otherwise, it'll be very difficult to make digital twins work. So that's my podcast for today. Happy to discuss and hear back from you if you have any questions, suggestions. On a lighter note, I've been reading this exciting book called Chromosome 6. It's by an author called Robin Cook. It's not a new book. It's relatively been there for a while. But it's so fascinating because what Robin Cook visualized in the book and wrote about in the book is something that we are seeing today after so many years as implications of genomics. And what genomics needs, again, is an understanding of the human DNA, the understanding of high throughput computing, especially edge computing, and also needs a fair degree of understanding of human ethics. And today we are lacking in all three areas, especially in a country like India, right? It's not that we don't have the money or we don't have the talent anymore. I think we need direction. So if you are really into what we call as healthcare fiction or medical fiction, pick up Chromosome 6 by Robin Cook. I think it's a good read. It dispels a lot of our myths around genomics. Obviously, it's also very disturbing to read the book and see how things worked out. I don't want to go into the plot. But give it a read and let me know what you think and let's discuss that in our next episode. Keep your questions coming. I've been responding to your questions as they come on email, and I've connected with quite a few of you who responded to my podcast in the past. So keep them coming. The best way to reach out to me is on Twitter at Dr. Vikram, or send me an email at drvikram@healthcare-in-india.net. Take care, stay healthy, and I'll talk to you soon.